Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Sunday, April 4th, recording at 5:16 p.m. British Standard Time. This audio is focusing entirely on subscribers' emails of general interest. I try to do one of these a week. And this first one from Daniel refers to my view that Wall Street is in a secular bear market, and that we are in the late stages of what has been a good medium-term rally within that secular bear market. David, does the bear market case not rest to a large degree on the U.S. debt issue, which GavCal so convincingly refutes in what I sent you on Friday and you then posted on your site? What is it that still makes you believe in the secular bear market scenario? Is it long-term financial cycle theory, which might now no longer apply within a new financial globalization era where central banks cooperate to a larger degree than before? Is it the move away from a America-centric world, which in itself does not necessarily result in a secular bear market? Can we not conceive of a financial investment bubble which might last for a decade or longer, as new middle-class investors in the now strongly emerging countries of Asia, Russia, etc., want to put their money to work in global financial markets, also motivated through the continuous expansion of financial TV, CNBC, Bloomberg, etc., in those countries as well? It might also be of interest to your large audience if you were so kind to again explain the arguments underpinning the secular bear market case. Okay, try to be very brief on that. First, the hypothesis of a secular bear market is not guaranteed, but what we do know is that a very big bubble burst on Wall Street in the first quarter of 2000, and what we also know is that the whole history of bubbles indicates that they take many, many years to unwind. And I've described the phenomenon as a process of an expanding bubble on rising optimism, and it's really created not so much by economic activity as by P/E ratio expansion. In other words, people are willing to pay more for equities than they were previously, and they carry that to ludicrous extremes. In the long secular bear market, which is not a straight line, of course, it's interrupted with a number of very large rallies, as we saw during Japan's long secular 13.4-year bear market, and as we saw, and as we've certainly seen recently, but if your contention is that this is not a secular bear market, then we go back to the late 1960s and all those dips and rallies that we saw during the 70s and so on. Okay. Second point I would make is that people, just to finish on that, if Wall Street is not in a secular bear market, then it really is moving away from what has been that pattern, which has existed for, I was about to say decades, but I could even say centuries. Second point I would make is that people always say it's different this time, because they want it to be different. Now, equally, just because it's happened before, I'm not going to sit here and say, well, of course it can't be different this time. Anything can happen in theory, but I'm just saying it's not a good bet. Third point I would make is that central banks are the problem as often as they are the solution. Now, next point I would say is that Asia could uncouple to an extent, at least for a while, but Asia's also a high beta market, and therefore it's really hard to imagine Asia making worthwhile gains at an acceptable risk at a time when Wall Street might be really quite weak. And then lastly, though, I'll say from a practical standpoint, it doesn't necessarily matter to us here today. What I think we need to do is be aware of the history, keep our eyes wide open, and not get seduced by the bull market for the next 10 years in perpetuity sort of theory that some have advocated on Wall Street just because, well, it's always nice to believe in the Easter Bunny and sugar plum fairies. I don't mean to be that sounds terribly flippant, and I apologize for that because this is a very good question and very well put. I just take the view that we want to be very aware of the history. We want to watch the charts very, very closely, and also keep a close eye on the bond market, because what has been bull market killer number one, whether it's big secular bull markets or whether it's good medium-term rallies, well, it's tended to be rising interest rates. And you saw what happened to bond markets when those employment figures came out on Friday. And if bonds were to continue to go down, one of the things you've heard me say before is that that would initially be favorable for equities, as we saw on Friday, because some money comes out of bonds and goes into stocks. But if bond prices continue to weaken, yields continue to rise, the bond market is a very good indicator, probably well ahead of the stock market in terms of anticipating rising interest rates. So the weaker bond markets are, the greater the dangers are becoming for stock markets, even though they might benefit from it in the short term. SF, I only have the initials here, says, "I just saw Hugh Hendry admitting to have been behind the manipulation of the share price of gold bullion securities. He said that someone had taken a large short position and he went long and screwed the guy. He sold the shares to the short seller at $427, for which he paid $412." Well, yes, I think when I said I really was amazed to see the gold bullion securities go to that quite large premium to the gold price, that it must suggest that somebody was actually short. It strikes me as kind of a rather foolish thing to have done, but at any rate, I quite accept that that's what happened, and I'm just glad that I was able to get out of that or take advantage of the squeeze in my gold bullion position, which I sold at 435, as you may recall. Ian says, "On your comment of the day, today you had links to, for example, TIE, SET Index, the Investec Global Energy Fund in a new window. So I can just click on the link and then close the window when done. But your link to the Palladium chart didn't open a new window. So when I closed it, I was suddenly out of the Fuller Money website. Can we rely on links always opening up to a new window, or what is your policy?" William, I apologize for that. That was my mistake. I try to be pretty meticulous in checking those, but it's really the way I upload the website. And I obviously missed a connection there on the Palladium, but it would always be my intention to have it so that when you closed the window, it would take you right back to the website. And I'll actually have that corrected. It's a little bit tricky to do. If I catch it in the next day, if I'd seen your email a little earlier, that would have helped me to do so. But it's my problem, and I hope we don't get many of those. Okay, Ira says, "Chart from Thursday's New York Times, April 1st, and not a joke. Quote, playing games, unquote, but hard to believe they will just let the yen run. As you suggest, when they step back," he's obviously talking about the Bank of Japan and the Ministry of Finance here, "as you suggest, when they step back in, I imagine it could be ugly for a bit of time as the yen retraces some ground. I like the new format, particularly the short description of items included in the audio and the statements as to its length, providing some guidance as to whether I make the sandwich before the audio or afterwards." Now, some subscribers have complained about the length of the audios. They just say, one, you don't have to listen. I don't expect people to listen to all of them, but they are there if you need them. And I think this is also an issue of multitasking. I know one subscriber who said that he listened to the audio while eating breakfast and then also scrolling through his charts. Okay, John says, I'm also concerned about global markets from early summer onwards, as the four-year cycle may peak soon. Will it be bear skewed, like the last one, symmetrical, or bull skewed? Who knows? But the current rally could be Greenspan's last hurrah. I'm not sure what he means actually by this bear skewed, symmetrical, or bull skewed, but I'd just say let's keep an open mind on this. Watch the charts, because they, and not the fundamentals, will tell us whether this rally is going to continue or not. And then also watch the bonds, which I've already covered. Jim says, I don't know what other subscribers think, but I am definitely negative on the audio presentations. It takes away my flexibility on what to put emphasis on and re-examine unless I have my secretary transcribe the whole thing, which is what I thought we pay you to do. Also, we have to listen to all of your presentation to find what interests us instead of easily skipping what doesn't. I don't happen to have an interest in soybeans, for example, nor certain markets you comment on. I am deeply disappointed in your service since I subscribed after reading one of your letters, which a friend sent to me, and I thought it was very worthwhile. I will, of course, not be renewing my subscription, although it is reasonably priced. It's your new format and audio I did not anticipate, do not appreciate, nor do I find it user-friendly. But I've got a certain amount of sympathy here with Jim because I did change the type of delivery and the service that I've provided. I think I've expanded the service, but I understand it's not going to be for everyone. And so I'll say just, okay, the audio isn't for everyone, at least not every day, but it's there if you need it or want it. Then what I would, though, ask Jim is what is it that you found in the hard copy that you don't get in the subscriber's comment of the day, only in a little bit more detail and in a more timely fashion, hopefully. Frederick says, I like your new instant format, no longer the hard copy. Find a quiet corner, cup of coffee, and read for 2 hours. Now I get my daily fix. And there is the rub. Information overload? Not really. Just got to manage the time effectively, or be selective. Set aside an hour each day, every day, but there is the discipline. Even with the hard copy, I really only read the currencies, but now I am into all sorts of facets. So much so, I need a website that can give me up-to-the-minute prices for indices, equities, and commodities. Can you oblige, please? I already get currencies from XE.com and Bloomberg.com, but so far, not for the rest. Liked your audio about stop losses. I have the same problem. Maybe if you gave some real examples of your trades, we may be able to understand better. Well, 2 points there. First, can I oblige, please, with the instantly updated website of charts? I don't make sales pitches on these audios or in this service at all, I hope, but the chart analysts service does produce an enormous amount of charts, but unfortunately they're day out of date, and I catch a certain amount of flack from my, no, not flack from my colleagues, that would be a gross exaggeration, but they say, David, what can we do so that you'll use our charts? And I say, make them up to date. If something happens during the day and I want to comment on it, I don't want to put up a chart and say, well, this was really interesting today, a potentially important signal, but you can't see it because the chart won't be updated until tomorrow. And I think they are working in that direction, but it's expensive and it takes time, as you'll appreciate. As far as my own trades and stops are concerned, I really don't feel that I could give much more information on my own trades, but I just say this on stops in general. First, the stop is an insurance policy against open-ended losses, and of course, insurance costs money. And the risk, as far as the positions are concerned, I mean, you don't pay the insurance up front with stops, but if you have stops, then inevitably you're going to get stopped out on a number of occasions, and sometimes that will be fortuitous in the sense that it prevents you from losing a lot more profit, or worse still, having a big loss. But inevitably, sometimes the cost of that insurance policy will be that the market moves back, triggers the stop, and then goes on and scores a worthwhile gain. It's a sod's law sort of thing. But I find that stops are always going to work best in very consistent trends. Now, of course, you'll look around and you'll see some extremely consistent trends, and you'll see a number that are quite choppy and volatile. It doesn't take too much imagination to appreciate in which environment stops are going to be more effective. And then I would say that assuming that you have a trending market that's reasonably consistent, that will enable you to select a technical stop. And I would say that stops, people use two types of stops. They use a technical stop, which is based on levels that they see on charts. And that ought to work reasonably well, more often than not, with a consistent trend. The other type of stops people use are financial stops, which is basically their pain threshold. And if that's not a technical stop, you've got a higher chance of getting whipped out in that market. Needless to say, if you're in a ranging market, I wouldn't even bother with a stop unless you're hoping that the range is about to end and give way to a trend, because in a ranging market, it's almost certainly going to get hit. Now, I will from time to time alter my stop policy because I might feel nervous about markets. I did that with, say, with tin and with zinc not too long ago. I was nervous because of the dollar's rally at the time, and therefore I jammed my stop up. I did that with corn as well a short while ago, and both those stops took me out. They took me out at small profits. So what I was basically doing was cutting my risk down as close to zero as I could, and leaving the door open in case markets moved quite well in my favor, or moved in my favor. In those instances, they didn't. The stops got hit, and then I was out, and then the trends went on and reasserted themselves. But it's the sort of thing that we've all got to play by ear, really, and back our intuition as well as what we see on the charts. If I'm nervous, I'm always going to jam up the stop. You might say, well, why not just take the position out? Well, because it might still perform. So there we are. But stops are never going to be easy. It's just whether you want the insurance policy or not. And if you've got a large leveraged position, you almost certainly do want the insurance policy, I would suggest. Daniel says, I noticed that you bought Investec Energy Fund a few weeks after mentioning it first. I was expecting the fund to correct down a bit, which it didn't. Maybe you also were thinking along the same lines. Well, no, not actually. I mean, I certainly knew that that fund, as you did when I put the chart up, that that fund had performed very, very well, and that we weren't coming in cheap. However, this was, for me, this is quite a long-term holding. I just want to have a stake in black gold. I don't want to have the hassle of looking into all the individual shares myself, so I'm backing what I hope is a good fund manager, and I'm relying on Ian Little, who had done the research on this, and this came up with the Investec Energy Fund as his choice. It's the one managed by Tim Guinness that I mentioned repeatedly. I didn't buy it instantly because there wasn't anything that I really felt was a timely sell within my portfolio at the time, and I didn't want to put new money into the markets. So I didn't buy it until I was able to sell that gold bullion securities at 435, and that took over a week to get the full position in gold bullion securities out, because they'd hit that offer and then it'd back away and so on. But that's why the delay. John says, "What a beautiful day. We should have been out pedaling in the countryside and not sitting in our offices. Never mind." And this came in last week, obviously. That's a sympathy I share, John. "Can you let me have your thoughts on sterling, the sterling dollar market? Is it an interest rate play? Namely, if the BOE, Bank of England that is, tighten in front of the Fed, then sterling will break through 190 again. Any thoughts will be appreciated." Well, now, I normally don't do individual things, and I certainly don't do individual shares in these audios, but I tend to think that probably sterling dollar is of general interest, at least to a significant minority of listeners. Now, John, just for background, I'd make several comments here. I remain of the view that we've seen most of the dollar's bear market for the next few, in terms of the next few years. We've seen most of it, but probably not all of it, or certainly not all of it against all the currencies. But I'm not of the school that we're going to get a dramatic collapse of the U.S. dollar anytime soon, and one good reason for that is the strength of the U.S. economy, and also the fact that people like the Chinese and the Japanese would be traumatized, particularly the Japanese, to see the U.S. dollar collapse. Now, currently on cable, sterling dollar, it's ranging at present. Now, sterling has a high interest rate. It's 4% and probably rising, almost certainly rising. And that means the interest rate differential is solidly in sterling's favor against the dollar by 300 basis points. So that, now while I expect U.S. interest rates to move up, sterling rates have been leading the way and will probably continue to do so, mainly because of concern over the housing market. So could sterling go on and test that 190 above and maybe even a little bit more short could? But I think this is, say, late in the cycle in terms of the pound's gain against the U.S. dollar overall. And this is the last point I would make on this, is that the strong pound is certainly not helping the U.K. economy at the moment, and we're going to hear more about that if or when it appreciates a bit further. Tony says, "Recent gains in some commodities, metals, appear to be at least in part due to a cheaper U.S. dollar. Does your thinking that palladium will continue up include a continuing decline in the U.S. dollar as well as supply inelasticity? I am enjoying the new Fuller money." Well, Tony, I think that the dollar has, well, there's no doubt that the dollar's decline has been a factor in the firmness of these commodities. But I think that the big theme is increasing demand and against this background of supply inelasticity. And I expect that theme to run on and off and mostly on for a number of years. It could run for pretty much the next decade or so. Now, it'll vary from commodity to commodity, obviously. But if the demand picks up for palladium, then really it's not, if it picks up considerably, it's a bit hard to see where all that additional supply is going to come from. Although there's no doubt that a stronger price would encourage the release of more palladium. And I think Nautilus Nickel, for instance, has been certainly sitting on a lot of its palladium that it could be releasing onto the market, and quite right too, because the price had been very depressed, so why should they release it at a very low level? Now, my thinking on palladium is that it's still so cheap relative to the other precious metals, and when an important commodity like that is cheap, an industrial commodity, people tend to find additional uses for it, and for instance, they'll be using it more in jewelry. And then, and we, you would have seen on the website the item on the breakthrough, which will enable palladium to be used in diesel engine catalytic converters, whereas previously that could not be the case. Now, it'll probably take a number of months and maybe a year or more before that actually becomes a reality. But it's a good example of just the low price causing further research and technological innovation here to ensure that this metal had other uses. So the demand for palladium is likely to be increasing, and that's the main reason why I think it's going to go up. And then there's a certain amount of investment demand as people want good real assets because they're concerned about all the credit creation that's taken place, and I certainly understand that. Now, last letter here, and I apologize if I haven't covered yours, but I try to spot all these. It's not always easy when you find suddenly 200 to 300 emails can come in a day, and a fair amount of spam in those, which is a plague, but I don't want to digress any further. This one's from Alan. And he says, as I understand it, the logic in moving from your written monthly words of wisdom of Fuller Money and the intervening Fuller Money Plus to the daily audios was made on the basis of bringing to subscribers your more timely thoughts on the activities of the markets, your analysis of their movements, and your own positional changes. But from my own and possibly other subscribers' perspective, who invest for the longer term and who are either uninterested or don't have the time to follow your speculative trades in attempting to make fast bucks, the new and increasing priority on short-term speculative trades is a retrograde step, as it detracts from and clouds the longer-term fundamental views which were previously so appreciated. I truly believe that your more instant modus operandi needs a more equal emphasis of your time and efforts between those quite different objectives of your subscribers. As ever, constructive food for thought and regards. Well, Alan, I appreciate that, and very tactfully worded there. And I am, of course, very conscious of the fact that there's a broad constituency out there in terms of interests. Now, what I would just say is that the Friday audio always takes the long-term view. It's primarily the long-term view. Devoted almost entirely to the long-term view. Now, the daily audios do often refer to long-term themes, but short-term issues with a daily service will by definition get more mention. For instance, I can't repeat every long-term view every day without boring you and myself. And incidentally, I've always done the trading. It's just that you didn't hear about it so much before with a monthly issue. So I'm providing more information and more ideas with a new service, which is, of course, more flexible. But rest assured, though, Alan, and anyone else who holds this view, I'm very much a top-down investor. And I spend a lot of my time just looking and thinking about historic trends, where we are in terms of big long-term cycles as far as the various asset classes are concerned, and I do that with an interest in wanting to invest my capital where I feel the greatest opportunities actually lie. And as you'll know, that's been commodities recently, and a number of people get concerned about that because they think, oh my god, this is a commodity service. No, it isn't. It's a global strategy service, but commodities are very much in form, and therefore, and have been for over a year, as you know, and therefore I've been quite drawn to these. In terms of stock markets, though, when we had that major low March a year ago, you know that my interest picked up considerably from that point onwards in terms of the overall rally, and I'll be moving away from stocks a bit more while always commenting on them, always comment on these asset classes. But I'm very much a top-down analyst, so I start with the big picture long-term theme, and I want to mention that repeatedly on these services to try to tell people, inform people exactly where I feel we are in these big long-term cycles. And then we go from there down to some of the medium-term trends within those cycles. And then in a fractal process, we go down to some of the shorter-term trends within those cycles. And that's where some of the trading and short-term timing activity actually occurs. But I feel that if I didn't pay an enormous amount of attention to the long term, I wouldn't be able to do the short-term stuff off as well as well. Okay, folks, enjoy the rest of your weekend, and thank you very much for these emails.